Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds. And they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
The following is a presentation of the Four Center podcast feed.
From the center of the galaxy, this is the Four Center podcast feed, and this particular episode is one of our deep dives. We're going to dive deep into the big picture of the Book of Boba Fett, take a look back at the whole series now that the whole tapestry has been woven together. I'm Joseph Scrimshaw.
I'm Ken Napsok. It's going to be so fun to look back our nostalgic memories to Book of Boba Fett, the show that ended last week. But it's important to look back when it's all completed, like Joseph said, that tapestry hanging on our castle wall here at Force Center, to find what it means. But you guys out there listening have heard Joseph and I all through this season, this Book of Boba Fett reporting. We felt, there's another voice out there to do that. So today, joining us to look back on Boba Fett and all the lessons and fun we had is our special guest.
Hello, my name is Jennifer Landa.
Oh, yay. It's fun to act like we didn't know who the special guest was, Ken. Like, what? We just sent out an email and somebody was going to show up and it's Jennifer.
Big reveal, confetti.
Big reveal. We are so happy to have you here, Jennifer. We're going to get into all of the Book of Boba Fett talk, but your TikToks have been so great, and to see your enthusiasm, to see you zero in on specific ideas and moments in history, it's been such great Jennifer Landa style reporting on Boba Fett on TikTok, and it's just been great.
Furry Jawa hands, the Star Wars investigation. There's just been so much. I can't wait to dive into it all with you guys.
All of these big returning characters, but how furry are the Jawa hands? That's the big question that haunts us every night. All right. We are going to talk about Audible because we want to let you know, as always, that today's podcast is brought to you by the aforementioned Audible. You can get a free audiobook download and a 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/4center. Over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. This week, we are continuing to recommend Midnight Horizon, the latest High Republic adventure by Daniel Jose Older. You can download your free audiobook today by going to audibletrial.com/4center. But Ken, there's more.
There is more indeed. We have another. There is another Inside Editions. Publisher of a ton of great Star Wars books is offering 35% off across their website if you use this special link, insideeditions.com/discount/FC35. This week, we're recommending the Inside Editions book, Jedi Artifacts. Yes, get the book and get the artifacts using that link, insideeditions.com/discount/FC35.
And with that out of the way, we can dive into the Book of Boba Fett. Ken and I are going to share some of our thoughts. Some of these questions are for all three of these, three of us. But some of these questions are for Jennifer, because we're really hungry to know your full perspective. So we want to start with the big picture. Jennifer, what was your overall reaction to the Book of Boba Fett? Did it hook you right away? And if so, how did it do that? What elements spoke to you? All that great stuff.
I loved it. It was like, it was a continuation of my love for Return of the Jedi, what I've been waiting for all these years. And immediately, just being in that setting of Jabba's palace, of course I was in. Then when we see the Gamorrean guards and we see all these familiar alien species, I was thrilled because it's one of the things that I've been wanting to see throughout this new era of Star Wars. I want to see more Ithorians. I want to see the, Clutoonians, all these species which we got in the Book of Boba Fett. And I thought that Boba Fett himself, Temuera Morrison, his performance was phenomenal. He was so good as Boba Fett, and not just like, as a badass, but he brought depth to this character that I did not know was there. It was just really, it was a fun and also beautiful show.
Yeah. So, because you, if I remember correctly, you were kind of okay on Boba Fett, right? Like you weren't a super Boba Fett fanatic, but you were not also like a, why is Boba Fett here?
Right. I was like, I didn't understand the hype around him even, as a kid. I was like, yeah, he's cool, but we don't really know anything about him, which I know really appealed to a lot of people as kind of that mystique. But yeah. For me, it was just like there were so many other things to dive into. So I was like, do we really need a Boba Fett movie way back when? Do we really need a Boba Fett show? And then when he appeared in The Mandalorian, I was like, yes, we do. We do need a Boba Fett show. And I just... every week I felt like a kid again. It just was so much fun and it brought me so much joy as a fan. Mm. So I'm loving the series. I really hope that they do a season two. Really hope.
I love what you're saying that has a perspective of fun and heart, like that there is absolute depth. Like Boba Fett, this character who, at some points in his history was stoic and unknowable, kind of took us on a little tour of his heart. And then literally, like for you in particular, Jennifer, took you on a tour of Jabba's palace. Let's go down to the kitchen.
Oh my gosh. I was like, are they going to bring Jabba chef? Are they going to do a Jabba's tales? Are they going to bring that story back? No, but that's all right. That's all right. I appreciated it. It's just fun. It's just, you could tell that everyone on that show was having fun making it. From the concept art to the creature design, everything. To of course the writing and directing. So it was awesome. Great.
Awesome. Yeah. So yeah, we'll try to dive into some of those details, but I want to take a moment to kind of sum up what each of us thought this show was ultimately about. I think there's probably going to be some overlap in what we think the show is about, but I am really interested to just see like if we all tried to kind of compress it into a short summary now that the whole thing is over, what ultimately is the big idea of Book of Boba Fett? Ken, I want to start with you.
Yeah, I'll go with the title sentence here. And to me, it is that one change can lead to so much more. We've been talking about these big Star Wars themes every week, power of change, power of empathy, ability to connect with something outside yourself. And those themes, I think, need to be in Star Wars projects over and over and over again, because I think that's at the core of it. But I try to look at what this one was. And to me, it was this idea of Boba Fett kind of steps forward into change by himself at first, then with the Tuskens, and it just grows. And then everyone is affected by that. And how a positive move can continue to roll on out like a seismic charge of change.
A seismic charge of change. I love it. We'll lead to the big finale and save Jennifer for last, because I think Ken, now you have been talking, you know, I've been talking about this every episode, so we agree. I think a part of it for me is it is about pulp and fun, right? That's the storytelling style. So that was important to me about what it's about. I think what Jennifer was saying of that spirit of fun and let's look at these different aliens in different places. So I think that was the tone. But then for me, it really just, it told the story of Boba Fett's long suppressed desire for family. Those shots of him as a kid with his hand on the window as his dad left, you know, remembering that he's always wanted family, connection, mutual respect. He, you know, gets that for himself. He builds that for himself. And then that desire extends out to the entire community of Tatooine. So we have this big theme of it's about family and connection. And then I think it's about what stops us from that and who pushes back against that. And it becomes this big picture about how much systems and leaders are resistant to change. I love that. Everybody, Boba Fett's like, hey, I think this might be better. I'm going to try this change in myself. I'm going to try to perpetuate it across Tatooine. And everyone resists, right? The criminal underworld, the kind of the armorer's version of the Mandalorian creed. Even the Jedi up to a point have their rules. And the show just kind of demonstrates the power of the individual to choose their own path. Mm-hmm. Boba Fett, Fennec, Din, Grogu, almost all these characters kind of take this risk of being vulnerable to have community. And in order to do that, it is this challenge to get past people who don't want things to change. Mm. So that's for me what I like about it. Jennifer, for you, what was the big idea? What did you take away from it?
Oh, boy, you both. I've been enjoying listening to your recaps on the show, because you guys just, you get it, you dive deep. And for me, I think it's about family, obviously, but it's also about loss, kind of what you're touching on, and how complicated families can be. And both Din Djarin and Boba Fett kind of felt like they had found their families with, you know, the tribe, the armorer, and then the Tuskens, and then they lost them both. Mm. And what does that mean? And then they have to go and rebuild a new family, and how that's challenging. And obviously we'll see that with hopefully season 3 of The Mandalorian with Din Djarin and Grogu and that journey. But yeah, I think that you guys just perfectly sum it up so well. For me, it's about cool starfighters and Gamorrean guards.
It is all that. But I really think you're touching on one of my favorite things about the show too, Jennifer, which is the ongoing process of healing and that loss of family that you're talking about with the both of them, especially when you think you found something that you needed and you did, and it's still there for you to learn from. But yeah, then the ongoing process is just life, right? You know, yeah. The hurt's going to still keep on coming. And I was joking with someone this weekend. I was at some tapings for a show and we're talking about it. I just said, you know, there's just something about this show. It's just kind of this self-help manual, which is why I really loved it in a lot of ways.
Right.
Yeah, absolutely. For me, this is like just this absolute pamphlet from the Rancor Keeper on ways to heal, particularly middle-aged people. But Jennifer, I love that you point out the trauma of it, because it is so easy, I think, in real life, if you kind of try something that leaves you open or vulnerable, to get hurt by it and then retreat back into your, you know, emotional, metaphorical armor. Boba and Din, sometimes their armor is an image of identity, but sometimes I think it's kind of an image of I'm going to retreat to this, right? And I'm going to be this stoic, you know, everybody is out for themselves. That's the truth of the matter. And I think the fact that they go through trauma, Grogu is going through trauma too, right? Reliving Order 66. Yeah. And they're all choosing to go like, yes, I know when you're vulnerable, you can be hurt, but I'm going to try again. I think it's so important that you point out the trauma.
And I think that that's why I really liked the pacing of the show. And we'll get into that later, I'm sure. But I felt like they really took their time exploring that with each character, you know, the loss and the trauma and the internal conflicts. We needed all that to build to this epic finale. And I thought that they did a really great job with that.
Yeah, I thought it was extremely epic. We're not, I'm sorry to upset any listeners, but we're not going to spend any time discussing the controversial spin.
Oh my gosh.
I feel like we have more exciting things to talk about than the 2 seconds of the flamboyant character spinning. Now that I said we were not going to talk about it, I do want to make sure that you guys are okay moving on from that topic.
When I saw that discourse break out this weekend, I went, oh yeah, he did spin. I just forgot. I just forgot.
Oh, my God.
Jennifer, did you have any spinning thoughts that you were burning to share?
I actually cheered when he did it. I was like, yes, it's like just flair, you know? And I know this was a part of the criticism, but for me, it felt very Robert Rodriguez, which I loved. And it just felt like fun. That, like, this is Star Wars. Let's not take it so seriously, you know?
Yeah,
so
it felt to me.
I thought it was great.
It felt to me like a character moment. I mean, I'm going to be honest. If I ever found myself in a blaster fight, I would probably be a little extra at the risk of my own life because I'd be like, cool, I'm in a blaster fight. Should I try a spin? That's probably how I'd get myself killed. But I'm going to be honest. I'd maybe spin too.
Absolutely.
I want to talk about Boba Fett himself a little bit. Jennifer, you touched on this, but Boba Fett has had so many identities over the different years of his existence as a Star Wars character. At the end of this show, who do we think Boba Fett really is? Does his character track over his many years of storytelling? What do you think, Jennifer?
Oh my gosh, that's to me what really blew me away with this character. And like I said, Tem, I'm going to call him Tem, Tem's performance is that, you know, it helps that he was in the prequels and it helps that he has that history with Star Wars. It just felt all the more believable. And of course, seeing the flashbacks, seeing what we know about the character from the Clone Wars, it all built up to this moment where looking at this character, I felt the weight. I felt the trauma that he's been through in his life. And when he says, I'm not a little boy anymore. Oh my gosh. I had flashbacks to him, you know, as a kid in the Clone Wars. And it just was, it was great. It was, for me, it was kind of unexpected. I didn't expect for them to dive this deep with this character. I just thought he was going to be really cool. And they proved that there was more to explore. And that is a testament to the actors' performance and where he went with that, which I thought was great.
Yeah. And I know you were never like a huge Boba Fett fan, but did you still feel like connected to the version of Boba Fett that you know from the original trilogy? Did you still see a part of that character existing in this more complex character?
Oh, I loved it because I just felt like, you know, Tem has like this warrior-ness to him. He has this natural gravitas, right? Mm-hmm. When he walks into a room, I'm sure anywhere, people probably go, whoa. You know, he has that presence about him, which is why people love Boba Fett for so long, is because he had that aura, that mystique, that presence. And Tem naturally has that. You put him together with the depth of the character. And for me, it's like, he's my new favorite character, Boba Fett. I never thought I'd say that. Shocking.
I know, right? I totally agree with you on the gravitas. There's this energy for me that keeps him connected to the original trilogy where he walks in a room and he's kind of like, I could kill you all, but I'd rather offer you a job at union rates and perhaps a melon. You know, like
right. And the humor. Oh, I loved the humor that he brought, which was just fun. It was pitch perfect, all of it.
Yeah. Ken, what do you think? Who do you think Boba Fett really is, and does his story track over the many years of storytelling for you?
He's like a good pop song. He is reborn. I really go back to what we were looking at in the first episode, the first chapter. And there was a little bit of discourse out there of like, ah, there wasn't like that big Baby Yoda reveal, which you know the season's going to be about that. And that's kind of both a MacGuffin and a key plot point or something like that. And I understand that side of it. But I really felt, and I said it then, and I believe it even more now, having just done a rewatch of this series already, that first chapter really does end with him getting his life back. It literally is in his hands. And now that he is, kind of free from being a captive of the Tuskens, is now on perhaps a path to you know, maybe at that moment he doesn't think become part of the tribe, but just he's got himself back in a way, but it's like, it's all new. It's all brand new. And I really love this idea of reborn. And then whether, and that kind of flows into the thought of you know, does it connect or is it a track with the original trilogy character? And there are moments where I've thought, I don't know if it does, but I mean that in a good way. I recently had a personal experience where an old Facebook photo of me popped up. That's not too long ago, but it's like 5-6 years ago. And a friend of mine was like, texted me the memory, you know, hey, remember this? And I was like, I don't remember that person. That person that I saw that is me, not just clean shaven, now have a beard, used to wear suits, now I don't even own a suit. It was just like, I don't know who that person is. Mm-hmm. And now I got to wonder if Boba Fett's looking back at holovids of Empire Strikes Back going, that's me, but I don't know who that is. And I just feel that from chapter one on is kind of how I look at Boba Fett now.
Yeah, I think for me, what I love about kind of seeing the original trilogy version of him in this great idea you have, Ken, of what if Boba Fett looks at his Facebook memories? I mean, that would be a great scene with him and Fennec. Like, yes, here's where I got Solo. It wasn't worth it. But I think what I love that I feel like that first episode so crystallized is I think he's kind of been lying to himself or just following the wrong path since he's a kid, right? That there's such an establishment of this. Seeing this traumatized kid that we know from Attack of the Clones, that we know from Clone Wars, that you can infer just from watching this show of, you know, who's on this ocean planet. And then everything after that, it seems like it's harsh and in pain. Right. And he's defined by that trauma, but he just wants to follow his father's footsteps. Right. He thinks he had a vision of who you're supposed to be, which is this is the vision of strength and power, which is kind of just keep your head down and look out for yourself and be the toughest, be the best, be the most stoic, and you'll be king, right? Yeah. And I think in Empire Strikes Back, I was of the generation that he was this unknowable badass. How could anybody be more deadly, more cool than Boba Fett? And all of that sort of confers an idea of power on the role of warrior. Yeah. And I feel like when he's looking back at the Facebook memory of Empire Strikes Back, he's just like, I was just Darth Vader's henchman. I didn't make decisions for myself. I lied to myself and said I was, but I wasn't a leader in my own life. I was being told what to do by other people and convincing myself I had power because I'm good at violence. Mm-hmm. I want real power now. I want to turn myself into a leader of communities, but more importantly, like, I want to take control of my own life. And I feel like at the end of that first episode, when he gets that melon and like he did that for himself, and now this kind of this idea of leadership and community is given to him because he earned it and he can go on earning it. You know, I think for me, that's how it all really comes together of he is still this violent, stoic guy, but he also wants to be within that honorable and caring and wants to explore lots of sides of himself. I think one of my favorite exchanges of the whole show is that, you know, exchange with the Rancor Keeper, where Boba Fett says the Rancor Keeper about the Rancors, I thought they were bred just to fight. And the Rancor Keeper says they're powerful fighters, so that's what most know. And I feel like that's his Facebook memory, if Empire Strikes Back. I'm like, that's what people think I am. And I know I am more than that, and I'm going to have the actual strength and vulnerability to try to be more than just that. I'm still a Rancor. I can still kill, and I will. Yeah. But I want to choose who I'm going to be. There's more to me than that.
Yeah, man, I love that scene. I Jen, I don't know what you felt about that Danny Trejo scene. I was just on a lunch break this week on a shoot telling a friend all these things about the scene, and I just felt they were looking at me kind of like I was crazy.
But
it's just Danny Trejo and a Rancor. I'm like, no, that was everything. That was the season to me. Was that that was the heartbeat.
Yes, we saw Boba Fett. I've never seen him so tender. I mean, he is an animal lover, right? Like, and just seeing how he's it was so natural. It was so real. And I'm just like, he's bringing all this and he's acting with, you know, this basically giant head puppet. And it was beautiful seeing that side. And when he says, I want to ride him. Yes, I want you to, too, because I want to see that, which we did, obviously.
Yeah, I want to ride him. He sounds like, to me, original trilogy Boba Fett, that clipped direct, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
But then, like, right around the same time, the same scene. It's like, oh yeah, that's the spot there. It's so good. It's so good. So for some viewers, it was jarring to have those two episodes of Book of Boba Fett that didn't feature much or any of Boba Fett. Jennifer, ultimately, do you feel like the story all came together? How do you feel about that discussion of those two Boba Fett-less almost episodes?
I love the episodes, as I know many people did. I thought it was actually very important to kind of check in and see where Din is on his journey. It also gave more significance when he shows up to help Boba Fett, because we know what he's been through. They could have just had him show up and just be like, hey, what's up? But it wouldn't have had the same like weight. In fact, he would have actually kind of just been reduced to more of like how Boba Fett was in the original trilogy, showing up for the cool factor. Hey, you know, give a little nod. So for me, I thought that that was important. Obviously, it was also important to be able to see Grogu and his training and why Grogu would show up as well. So all these pieces kind of had to come together in a nice way. And for me, it kind of felt like Game of Thrones-like, you know, where you're checking in on the different families, what's going on. And so I had no problem with it. To me, it just made the final episode that much more exciting and gratifying.
Oh, that's great. Yeah. I mean, I think we're probably going to be in agreement on that. But I'm also just really curious, as your initial viewing, right, when you sit down to watch these for the first time as they were being broadcast or streamed, and you were like, I'm so into Boba Fett. This is great. What other aliens are we going to see? Are we going to go to an Aqualicious house? And then you're seeing something different. Did you have any moment of being distracted, wondering, is Boba Fett going to show up? Or were you able to turn that off and just go on the ride of the episode that was being presented?
Never for a moment. I mean, well, that episode, you know, where's Mando and he's visiting the armor and we see, you know, the ring world. It was just, and the airplane, well, not airplane, obviously, but you know what I mean? Yeah. And the little Rodian child, it was like one thing after another. I was so sucked in to this story. But it's not like I went, you know, where's Boba Fett? Or, oh, I want to see more of that. I went, okay, that was an excellent chapter of this book. Now we're going to go forward to the next chapter. It's just was to me, I thought it was so exciting. And I was like, gosh, dang it, I need to go back to the Clone Wars and rewatch some scenes, some episodes, because I was like, oh, my Mandalorian lore is bad. So I gotta catch up on that, because they are bringing it back. They are writing it. They are, you know, Dave Filoni, he's got a master plan. And so I gotta refresh my memory.
Oh, this is so great. I'm almost getting teary to just hear the purity of like, it was really good and really fascinating. So I got sucked into it and I trusted where it was going to go, because I've just heard from so many people and so much discussion about, even if they enjoyed the episodes, they had a hard time enjoying them the first time around because they were distracted wondering where Boba Fett was. And it's just thrilling to me to hear that you were able to just disappear into the episodes.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I'm not a filmmaker. I'm not a writer. I just love watching. So wherever they want to take me, I'm going to be on board, because this is, I love this crew. So,
yeah. Ken, how do you feel about this now that it's all wrapped up? You know, how much of a controversy for you is it, or is it just in the rearview mirror?
It's in the rearview mirror, but also what's in the front of my windshield is this image of Jennifer as a baby Rodian just watching Mando going, yes, where are you taking me? Where are we going? Where are we going?
I want to be on the space greyhound with the Rodian child.
Exactly.
Yeah, look, I think it all connects thematically. We talked about it week to week there, and Jennifer's right. We get to know why those characters chose to be there with Boba Fett, which is the response to Boba being in their lives a little bit earlier. So all that kind of makes sense. And I think the other side is, then I guess Grogu and Mando just, you know, didn't have to be there in that finale. And that probably would have been okay as well. But that wasn't the case. And we really believe in engaging what's presented to you. And I think it's more smooth than people initially thought. And I too, I've said it before, I've grown frustrated and just plain exhausted with the discourse around the conversation. Number one, I just don't think it's new to Star Wars shows. Rebels has done this. I mean, Maul and Kenobi is one of my favorite moments in the Ezra show. So, and the Hera show and the Kanan show, to be clear. Bad Batch did that for a couple episodes. Clone Wars, which is arguably, you could say, hey, it's anthology series. We're used to it jumping around. I still look at the Mortis stuff has nothing to do with the Clone Wars and everything to do with the Clone Wars.
Right.
And you spend three episodes on Magic Space Planet. Like, and I just think it's normal. It's part of it. And I think when people go back on more rewatches, it will be smooth. That Bryce Dallas Howard episode particularly, I think, will just flow so nicely with what's going on. And I don't think you'll think about it as much. That said, I do want to acknowledge, I understand it. I do understand it. I said every week, I miss Boba Fett. And I think that was a testament to what was going on. I had a lot of fun. I wanted to go back. I wanted to spend some time with him. But, you know, again, I think I'm on the – I've already rewatched season one time again, and it just flows nicely. It builds towards the big finale. And so I think – I hope that will be the legacy of those episodes more than the discussions around the stubborn style of the show.
Yeah, you guys are both like really lifting me up
in a
good way, because I didn't feel negative, but I think I felt like some of the negativity of the discourse was starting to seep in on this issue in particular, you know, because I totally get the criticism, because I loved the episodes and was totally engaged. But there was a little bit of like, wow, OK, no Boba Fett, huh? But it was a minor distraction. Mm-hmm. You know, and I love the episodes. There's also just been a lot of discussion that I'm seeing online that it opens the door to making people think it's a marketing choice that makes people think we got to go back to Din and Grogu because, look, we want to keep them on the shelves, the toys. And, you know, like, and this is an ancient Star Wars conversation, right?
Yeah.
Right.
So I want to be open to those things. And even if I don't think that's true, it does affect how other people perceive it. So I want to be open to them and understanding. But you guys, it feels like, are kind of like bringing me home to just let myself enjoy it, because I do think it works so well. It's about choice. And for me, chapter 5 is Din working through, here's what the creed is supposed to be, but he doesn't want to choose the creed. He wants to choose Grogu. It's so important that the last line is, sure, yeah, but I'm going to go visit a little friend first. That's the decision. That's the conflict. And then chapter 6 has a lot going on, but it's ultimately about Grogu choosing Din. Like, yeah, this Force thing's kind of fun, but it's got a lot of trauma for me. And this is nice. Yeah. I'd rather be running around with Din, you know? So both of those episodes are about choosing family, which just funnels into all of the big themes of the whole show about choosing family and pushing back against kind of rigidity.
Yeah, I think, again, you know, seismic charge of change. Boba Fett makes kind of one big change, and it's going to, you know, you could argue that you see this in Mando chapter, I forget what chapter, but season 2, when Fett shows up. I think it all, that's part of the reason it all connects thematically for me, even though I get it, because I had so much fun hanging out with Boba Fett and Fennec.
Yeah, yeah. And speaking of that, let's move on to Fennec. Jennifer, how did you feel about Fennec Shand's role in Journey? Were you happy with the Fennec Shand journey in Book of Boba Fett?
Yeah, I mean, I would have obviously liked more. I think my thing is I could have had more episodes, right? It would have been nice to have a few more episodes just for my own personal enjoyment. And if we had gotten like her own, I mean... I don't know. I struggle. I thought that she was fantastic. Ming-Na Wen is, you know, she's 58 years old. That blows my mind. And she clearly, like I said before, you know, she was having fun. You can tell. And just like, they were a nice juxtaposition. She and Boba Fett, she's like, you want me to do something? You know, but then also calming him down. Let's reassess. Think this through. Like, I just thought they were great together. They were great partners. I would like to know more of her character. So, you know, I hope we'll see her again. But yeah, I thought she was great. I can always use more of everything. So.
Yeah, I think that makes total sense. I mean, but that's kind of a classic Star Wars thing of, did you like this? Yes, I would like more.
Right.
Ken, how did you feel about Fennec's role?
Yeah, on one hand, I'm very happy, very happy. And you're right, Jennifer, Ming-Na Wen just seemed to relish everything she got. And that's what a great actor does, is even take a one tiny scene and turn it into something bigger. Takes one line and turns it into something bigger. And I think she did that time and time again. And she was very key to the story. The character represented, I think, our point of view at times, and had important things to do, including especially the big thing in the end, cutting off the head of the snake. I thought that was... great stuff. Do I know her completely? Do I know her feelings about being saved in the desert in a complete way? Her origins? Not really. I know her more for sure, but I get those wanting more because I'm there too. And I think the difference is maybe for me is I don't think I was expecting that going into this series, not just because of the title of the show, but I saw a lot of discussions. And again, we refer this discourse and discussions. It's hard to avoid it, and it's hard to not have it kind of come hammer your head with what you think. And I just wasn't expecting the buddy cop crime drama that I thought some people thought, even based on quotes and marketing. I wasn't expecting that. I don't know what I was specifically expecting that, but that's why we kind of have that engage with what's presented to you kind of mindset over here, is it just kind of, you get to take what's there. But that doesn't mean you don't want more. I love Fennec Shand. I love the design of the character. I love her skill set. I love the way she was used in Bad Batch. So I'm pretty sure we'll get some more. And I hope we get some more with Ming-Na Wen. I do think the character deserves more.
Yeah, I think I'm in agreement with all that. I definitely would always be happy to have more, but I was really happy with the amount of great stuff about this character. Just from the surface fun, like there are multiple great fight scenes. I do love that she's got this kind of nice violence arc where Boba Fett keeps introducing her to everyone, just random people in the street. Like, this is Master Assassin Fennec Shand. And, you know, she's got this great journey where she is pushing back on Boba. Like, I'm trying to do this change thing that you're talking about, but I don't trust people. And almost everybody in the first few episodes are like, that person kind of gave you lip. I think they're gonna be a problem. Should I kill him?
Right.
And he's like, no. And so she gets to complete her journey in these two ways where he's finally like, you know how you've been asking me to kill people? This is who I need you to kill. And she does it extremely well, earns the title of Master Assassin specifically.
Yes.
But then also through her whole arc in Mandalorian and Book of Boba Fett, like, we meet her because she is hiding out alone in a desert wanted. That's what this life has brought to her, right?
Yeah.
That she gets shot by some punk in the desert and left for dead. That's what this life brought her. And then we see in those flashbacks that Boba's like, I think that's what this life is. It's, you know, getting paid money to be killed because idiots send you to do stupid things that don't matter. Yeah. And what if there's something else? And then we get her to see her grow to the point where, at the end, she's into this, right? Like, she started out wanted in the desert when we met her in Mandalorian. And by the end, she's co-ruling this place. And from this, like, great perspective of, if not us, then who? You know, it's so important to me that she says that line. Mm-hmm. So while I would have loved to have even more time with her, I think she absolutely goes through an arc. She's got this. Yep. She's the one who's questioning Boba's perspective. And she comes around and to the point where she's, like, even encouraging him to keep going on the path that he started.
Yeah, absolutely.
So true.
Great Fennec stuff. So, Jennifer, I did want to ask you about the Tusken journey. Obviously, for a ton of people, it was extremely joyful to get to know this much more nuanced version of the Tuskens. It started a little bit in Mandalorian, but even more in Book of Boba Fett. It was great to see this fleshed out indigenous society, but then it was upsetting to have it end in tragedy. How did you feel about the Tusken story and all of those big issues?
Right. Well, initially when it started out, I was like, oh man, I want to go back to the palace. Oh, I don't know about these flashbacks. But then it hooked me. And it felt very intimate. I felt like it was Temuera Morrison's some of his best performances. Getting to learn more about the Tuskens and their culture. It was really special. And so yeah, when they were killed, I was upset because I had envisioned this, you know, very tearful goodbye where he would say, thank you so much, I'm on my way. yeah. And unfortunately, we did not get that. And it was only until I went online that I started seeing people who were, you know, very, very concerned and upset with how that was handled. And I thought, wow, this is something that I had not thought about. You know, I guess if anything, I thought, oh, this is a part of our terrible American history. But now I'm understanding why it could be, you know, it can be problematic. And so, and I'm still reading things about it and from Native people expressing their feelings. So it's complicated. You know, I would have liked to see more of them. I was kind of hoping at the end that maybe a few had survived and they would come back. But unfortunately, we did not get that. I'm still holding out hope. I don't know. but I also read that Temuera Morrison said that it was important that he kind of created more of like a ceremony with the bodies. He was like, we need to do something a little bit more here. He's like, we can't just put them, you know, we got to make it seem more important and have reverence. And I thought that that was great that he advocated for that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, yeah, for me, it is, there's so much that's absolutely wonderful about getting to spend time with those characters, getting to spend time with that perspective, how important it is to Star Wars and how important it is to the real world because of just how clearly the Tuskens are coded as indigenous people to Tatooine. It relates to the real world, and it's one of those, like, it's not just a Star Wars conversation about whose lightsaber is cooler, right?
Right.
It has those real world implications, so I want to be able to talk about it as Star Wars storytelling, but also want to be really respectful that it has direct impacts to real world cultures. And it's helped me a lot to just see, like, great nuanced conversation from tweet threads to articles where I'm able to read a lot of different perspectives of Native and Indigenous people and, you know, think it through and just give myself time to listen and try to learn, you know?
I mean, and I think that they would benefit going forward if they're going to do something like that, to have, I don't know if they had this, like a reader, like a sensitivity reader, you know, who reads the script and is like, you know, this might be problematic. This might be triggering for some people. You might want to rethink trying it like this, or I don't know. I mean, there's plenty of people that they can call consultants to have their take on it. And I think that that's important. That's also the benefit of having a writer's room, is if you have many different voices. But of course, you know, Jon Favreau's, I know he's been doing, and Dave Filoni, I think, right? He did an episode. Mm-hmm. They did an episode together. But maybe moving forward, that's something they could consider.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think it's great to acknowledge that Temuera Morrison has that perspective and brought it, right?
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, it does just continue that conversation of how important it is to have multiple voices involved in creating the art that we all absorb. Ken, do you have any thoughts on that before we move on?
Yeah, as always, you know, it's like you want to kind of sit back and make sure you're listening to all those directly affected. And you said it too, Joseph, there's you know, nuance is that's an important word these days, right? Sometimes lost, sometimes it's there. You know, hearing from some folks and some groups who were like, yeah, hey, that's what happened to my ancestors. Did it hurt? Yeah, maybe that should make you think about this. And others are going, hey, you know, we get it. We get the trope. We didn't need that right there. And I think that's one of the things we'll all take going forward. I will admit, I sometimes have a thought of, you know, creators don't necessarily owe us any comfort, but I think they do owe us a little bit more understanding of the context and the times we're living in. And I don't think there was any, you know, malicious intent from Favreau or anyone other than, no. Hey, it's this, we're drawing from this, and isn't it that, and that, yeah, it should affect you. And sometimes maybe we're just in an era now, we are in an era where we have to be extra careful about that. And I think they did such, and part of it was they did such a good job of taking the old concept of the Tusken Raiders and the older stories and expanding it, and it affected and inspired people. So without a doubt, you're going to have passions, and you should have passions for what happened. In the end, I really do love the use of the Tusken people in this story. It made me rethink, you know, old views of the characters or just the use of them in the stories indeed. So I think it was effective in the end, but that doesn't mean it didn't hurt. And when I say creators, you know, don't owe us our comfort, I don't necessarily mean it in that, you know, they shouldn't go out of the way to hurt anybody. I don't think Favreau and team did, but I think that you just had to be extra careful. That's just where we are, and that's where we should be.
Yeah, I think what you're saying is really great, Ken, of like there are things that have filtered into our storytelling that have become tropes, and yeah, it's very important to know that you're not doing something as a trope, but you're doing something with the full weight and intent of the impact and of the historical connections, of just being aware that this isn't just a storytelling device. This is something with extreme history and weight to it. And
that's
real important. Yeah. So this is, it was odd to me. This episode, my wife was out of town, so I had to wait like a week before I watched chapter 3 with her. And we watched it and we talked about all this Tusken stuff, but between ourselves. And then I got to reveal to my wife. And actually, the debate ended up being mostly about the Vespas online. So we're going to have that same extremely strange segue from the absolute deepest and most important that Star Wars can be to the real world to the space Vespas. Jennifer, where did you land on the great space Vespa debate?
I loved them. No. When I saw it, I went, okay, all right, they're taking risks. And, you know, at first I was, of course, it was a little shocking to see these brightly colored Vespas, you know, on a dusty Tatooine. But I thought, again, it was fun. I also felt like it was indicative of how these characters see themselves, right? These kids, like, you know, they're teenagers, young people, they want to show off. They want to stand out. This is their way of showing, we don't belong here. We're too cool for you guys. And it also was very, obviously, as everyone's talked about, very George Lucas to have these kind of 1950s looking scooters. And I actually read, it was in the Hollywood Reporter, that Robert Rodriguez, this is before the show came out, he was talking about like color scheme and how Lucasfilm had said to him, you know, we have very specific colors that we use. And he was like, well, I want something more dangerous. And they were like, okay, well, here are the colors that we use. So I wonder if, I don't know if he was talking about the space Vespas or something else, but I just
thought. What else could he have been talking about, right?
Yeah, he even said, reporter was like, well, what are you talking about? Can you tell us? He goes, it'll be evident when you see the show. It's pretty evident, right? But yeah, I just thought it was something new and I appreciate that risk.
Yeah. For me, ultimately, I think I agree with everything you say, so I don't want to just repeat it. But I think the point of the mods is that they are young and they are making noise. They want to be seen and heard, from primary colors to spins during battle. They're a little extra because they want to be seen, like youth cultures often do.
Right.
Yeah.
Ken, any Vespa thoughts before we take a quick break?
This will never be a hill I die on. I in the end, really enjoyed them. I didn't initially, they stood out. Initially, I had a little bit more problem with just that chase sequence, not the speed of it, but just like sometimes I think Star Wars TV is contained. It's not a big giant budget. It isn't Rise of Skywalker, and it's not never going to be. So sometimes I just think some of the action sequences seem smaller to me than I want them to be as a Star Wars fan. So that was more my problem with the scene. That if you don't like the space Vespas and you hear me out on all the themes and the reasons why and the mods and George and race culture, if you hear all that out and at the end of the day you're still like, don't like them, I'm not going to fight you on it. I understand the point. It was very different. It stood out probably for a reason, but it does. It stood out. And that's what happens. You take a risk, you do something new, people are going to see it.
Yeah. And it's so great to know that Rodriguez goes like, yeah, I'm going to take a huge swing. And some people are going to go home run. And some people are going to go, why are you, what did you do? Never step here again.
Right.
That's what happens when you take a big swing. And it's cool to know he's like, I'm taking a big swing and the internet's going to let me know.
Oh, yeah.
All right. And on that note, we're going to take a quick break and we'll be back to discuss more of the Book of Boba Fett. Back in a moment.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas, big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
And we are back to continue our discussion of Book of Boba Fett, wrapping it all up with great guest Jennifer Landa. We're going to go into some really exciting Jennifer Landa topics, I think, here. we want to talk about the glory of the Sanctuary. There was so much to love here. Jennifer Beals' performance as Garza Flip, the return of Max Rebo, the possible ongoing life of Max Rebo, that astromech drummer. Jennifer, what were your favorite aspects of this new Star Wars watering hole?
Oh, I was dying when I saw this. I just loved it. Max Rebo on his organ. But, you know, Jennifer Beals as Garza Flip, she was phenomenal. I mean, at first, you know, they didn't give her a lot. So there was not much there, but I knew I was like, okay, I already like this character. I like what she's doing. And then when we see that speech that she gave Chrysantin, right? That gave me all I needed to know about her character. I was like, she has lived this life for a long time. She's dealt with a lot of Chrysantins, right? she has used her charm, and I loved it. It made me want to know more about the character, of course. It was great. It was unexpected. And it was a place that I would absolutely love to hang out because you know that she takes care of her guests, right? Yeah, she makes it a good time for everyone.
Yeah, I love it. It's just a contrast to Chalmers Cantina in Mos Eisley. That's that kind of like a dangerous place. It's kind of low down and dirty and that. I've always had that fantasy of like, yeah, I'd kind of like to go there, but I'm probably going to end up like Luke. Somebody's just going to be mad at me existing and want to murder me because my face looks too naive. But like the Sanctuary just feels like, yeah, no, I want to go there every night. And I love how much that was the point. Garza Flip, Jennifer Beals' Garza Flip had like, poise and charm and control from every scene. But that speech about change is currently one of my favorite scenes in Star Wars. It's just so powerful. And it's one of those moments that like, that's one of the pillars of the big themes of Book of Boba Fett of like, look, we've been through this war. Twi'leks have been through a lot. We've been through crime on Tatooine. There is no reason that we can't have a little bit of peace and a little bit of joy. Don't worry, I'm still taking people's money from gambling. I'm still making a large margin on these drinks. Look, I have not turned into a nonprofit, you know?
Right.
But there's no reason that everything has to be about violence and who's against who. Can't we all just have a drink and get along? That was so powerful, that desire, that strong desire for change.
Yeah, I'm such a fan of Garza Flip. I really am. And am I disappointed she's dead? Well, of course, because I love that character. But for me, I'm not taking anyone's frustration or anger with Beals' Garza Flip character dying. I just, again, that's just kind of one of those things where this is part of the story. And it does represent a painful loss because it was truly a sanctuary. And you're right, Joseph, to say it's like It's the opposite to Chalmers, but it doesn't go to like Canto Bight completely, right? Where it's just a false front, a facade for darkness beyond it or anything like that, or this sinful fantasy of Canto Bight. It's somewhere right in the middle, and it really does represent this image of the circle unbroken, or excuse me, the circle broken. The pain, the underworld of Tatooine, all the things that are kind of at stake and what people are trying to do. And it's, I called Garza Fwipa a champion of change while wearing my Hit It Max t-shirt designed by the great Brian Ward, my new favorite t-shirt in the world.
Yes.
Worn it like four times since I got it. Because she does really represent that. And you're right, Joseph, that speech is just so good. And talking about a performer getting, you're right, Jennifer, in the beginning, like one or two lines, right? She had a little bit to work with. She put so much into that. Her asking Boba Fett if he wants to wait at the bar with a drink while she gets him a table is one of my favorite moments of the show because of the subtext there. So yes. I really love everything about the glory of the sanctuary.
Yeah. And Jennifer, your TikTok about this scene was so good. I think it really drove home one of the other things I love. Like, this scene would have been amazing if it was just Garza Fwip trying to stop a conflict. But the fact that it was a conflict that is, you know, however centuries old between Wookiees and Trandoshans, and just that like literal, like, here's just kind of an angry Wookiee who just can't let, you know, centuries of animus between these two species, just can't let it go. You know?
Right. Oh, yeah.
You captured that so well.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. I mean, and even how can this Wookiee be so expressive? It's kind of amazing when you see, you know, the cameras zooming into him and just that look of just disgust and also like disillusionment. Like it's all there. And then when we see him, you know, walking out of the bar and just like, oh, it just was all so great. I'm like, how are they doing this? What kind of technology are they doing with a facial movements? It was pretty impressive.
Really amazing. And Jennifer, where do you land on the Max Rebo conspiracy theories? Do you think that he survived? Did he have the night off? Was he tipped off? Was he somehow complicit in the bombing of the sanctuary?
I think it would have been too much, right? I think that people would have focused so much more. Well, people already are focusing on it, right? I don't know. I mean, I actually went back and I was like looking at the wreckage of the place. I'm like, who do I see here? You don't see any bodies. At least from what I can tell, right? I think that's maybe just like a Disney thing. I mean, this is kind of supposed to appeal for younger people. So, but I'm looking for bodies everywhere, like the Sarlacc pit. I was looking.
Who do we know in there?
Ken,
do you are you a Max Rebo conspiracy theorist?
I do believe Max is alive. I do believe it was a night off. I just can't at this point. I just can't at this point accept that Max would have sold himself out to the Pikes. But at the same time, he was very loyal to Jabba for years. Maybe he had some issues with Boba Fett and the change he was trying to bring here. I can't imagine that, though. I'm really hopeful that Max will return.
I'm just glad that there was no shots of him so we can imagine that that he made it out. And I need that Astromech drummer rebuilt. One of my favorite things ever.
Yes.
Jennifer, I want to ask you about your just Return of the Jedi, Jabba's Palace super fan that you are. What did you enjoy most of seeing more of all of that area? Everything from the palace to a new Rancor to seeing inside the guts of the Sarlacc, the Gamorreans, all of it. What was your favorites in that all that?
I felt vindicated. I felt, you know, for years I have talked about, I've preached the gospel of Return of the Jedi, and everyone has laughed in my face. And now I'm like, do you see, guys? This is cool. Like, this is why I loved Return of the Jedi so much. And seeing the Gamorrean guards in their, like, buff form, I loved that. I could see why they would, you know, be hanging around and protecting the palace. They were not how they were presented in Return of the Jedi, which was certainly more boars in Return of the Jedi. They look more human-like, in my opinion, in the Book of Boba Fett. I loved the Sarlacc pit. I was very happy that we got that jump scare with the beak-like tongue, which again, fans were so upset when they added that in. And I was like, ah, you see? George was right to add that in.
I'm in that, Jennifer. Right? Little Shop of Sarlacc is one of my least favorite things. And now I'm like, no, I get it. I get why it's pretty horrific in a wonderful way.
I always liked that the beak, the Sarlacc could make some choices about what it's going to eat. It doesn't just have to have whatever rolls down. Like, that beak can make some choices. Right. In that horror, it was one of the amazing shots, one of the best horror shots in Star Wars. Like, what is that? Oh, it's the beak. Oh, Lord.
Oh, my gosh. I feel like Jon Favreau and I could be really good friends. Like, it's just as if it's like everything I wanted. He gave me the only thing he did not give me was salacious beak crumb. And like I said, I was looking in the wreckage by the Sarlacc. I was looking. I didn't see anything.
You are pausing and zooming for a salacious crumb.
Someday we'll get him. And the Ewoks, that would have been a nice addition as well. But
would you have been upset if there was an Ewok in the Sarlacc when Boba was escaping in the first chapter?
That would have been cruel. That would have been cruel. I would have felt like that would have been, that would have been taking a stand, and I would not have liked it.
Understandable. Oh. Understandable. Any other thoughts on everything else we saw of the palace or sort of Return of the Jedi related?
Oh, God, the Rancor. I'm going to dive into the Rancor, I think, for a video. Just seeing how far it's come from the puppet that they did in Return of the Jedi with, it was just, it was really a lot of trial and error back in the day. And so seeing it going all over the place, jumping around at whatchamacallit, King Kong. It was pretty awesome.
Awesome. That's great. Awesome. Well, let's get into Luke Skywalker then, because, surprisingly, Luke Skywalker showed up in the Book of Boba Fett show, which was great. How do we feel about the choice that he gave to Grogu? Jennifer, I want to go to you first. You are the only actual parent among us. And I think this is definitely kind of parenting moment. How did you feel about that choice that Luke gave to Grogu?
I mean, I think he knew. I think he knew what he was going to choose. That's what you do when you give kids choices. You kind of either lead them or you kind of have a feeling of where they're going to go. Otherwise you wouldn't present them with a choice. Right. At least, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I think it was fitting, right? That Grogu chose to leave his training to help his papa, his friend, just like Luke left his training. I thought that was a really great parenting moment. I'm believing that Grogu is a toddler. I that's what my feeling is that he's just, but, and then I also felt like, well, is he too young to make this choice? This is giving him too much power. I want to see him with a lightsaber, but that was an interesting story, part of the story.
But it sounds like you leaned more toward Luke sensing that this child had already made his decision and what he needed is to have it framed by an adult. It sounds like you lean more to that more than it was irresponsible of Luke to make this young person make a big life choice at this age.
Oh, yeah, no. I mean, he wants Grogu's heart to be in it. You know what I mean? Like and so he's really, when you're presenting kids with choices, is you're trying to empower them so that they feel good about the choice that they made. I mean, that's the idea behind it. You know what I mean? Like, I spend freaking 15 minutes every morning getting my daughter, which shirt would you like? This one? I present her with two options, this one or this one. And I'm like, I hope you don't choose this one. And she always, she might choose it, but she feels good. And she starts her day feeling like, I don't have much other agency, but I know I can choose my shirt. And so there's something really powerful about that for kids.
I love this idea. I know we don't have the 2 hours to go into this attachment issue like we did last week here on the channel. I really love hearing your perspective on that, Jennifer, this idea of like, I kind of already know, but I'm going to give you the full context of your choice. And maybe you even feel more confident that you picked the right shirt for school today. That's pretty great. I love that.
I really love that perspective. Ken and I had a very long conversation about this, so we won't repeat it, but I really do like that Luke just it felt kind to me, and I'm open to all sorts of other opinions, but it really did feel like, it seems like you don't want to be here, buddy. Mm-hmm. You can go if you want. Mm-hmm. And Grogu's like, thanks, I will.
Right.
Thanks for giving me the option, and I'm out. How do you feel about that, though, Jennifer? Do you think that Grogu made the right choice to go back to Din Daddy Jaren?
I mean, see, this is where I do kind of step back, and I'm like, well, practically speaking, for this, season 3 of The Mandalorian, you got to have Grogu and Mando together. Because if you don't, then we're going to have to check in on his training with Luke. And then that kind of sets off a chain where it's like, then we start thinking, at least I was like, is he the first student of Luke's Jedi Academy? Like, wait, oh my gosh, and the ramifications, and you know all the videos that would be made about that. And did he know Kylo Ren? I mean, it's like, it just goes on and on and on. So I think just practically get him back with Mando and we start that storyline in season three. That's just all I was thinking about, to be honest.
Okay, yeah, that makes a ton of sense. And you don't feel, as a viewer, I've seen a couple people see this, so I'm curious what you said of like, or what you thought of people saying, well, if he was just going to go back to Din, why did we have this storyline? Why did he leave anyway? What do you feel about that, Jennifer?
Oh, well, we want, number one, we want to see a little bit of training, right? I mean, he has this incredible gift, so we want to see him kind of hone that. So at least we got a little bit of that. Oh, I can't even imagine. Oh my gosh, I don't even know. What do you guys think?
I mean, I think it is about choice. I think it is about the first two seasons of Mandalorian, Din and Grogu kind of found themselves together. And by Grogu choosing to leave because he chose to call for Luke, right? And then Luke came and he chose to go with him. And then, like, so the choice that Luke's presenting him is kind of like the third time somebody's asked Grogu, like, really, really, what do you want, kid? Because it seems like you keep choosing this thing because you kind of think you should want it, but what you really want is this. And now we're going into season three. Not only are they in the cool N1 Starfighter together, but Din has said, yeah, I chose to take my helmet off and I'll take the consequences because this kid means that much to me. I choose him. And I think now we have it from Grogu too, of like, I really did try to see if I wanted to go back to this other life that I used to have and these foggy traumatic memories, but I don't want that. I want to be with Din. So for me, it's they choose to be together. They're not just stuck together now. Whatever mission they're on, it's their mission together next season. Yeah, so anyway, a lot of strong opinions for me about Grogu and his choice. I also love that, you know, we see his training pay off. You know, I love it when Luke says about Yoda, he was small like you, but his heart was huge. And we see that play out in the way Grogu handles the Rancor. It's such a tender moment to me. Any other Grogu or Luke thoughts, Jennifer?
I actually burst out crying. It was shocking. I was not expecting it. And that specific moment when he says that to him and seeing that was such a moment that I feel like I've had with my girls, you know, where I'm just like, just because you're young, just because you're small, you can still be brave. You can still be strong, pointing to examples. Like, it just was so real. And I just was like, oh my, and then I started laughing because I'm like, I'm crying at a freaking puppet and this, like, you know, this deep fake Luke, like, what is going on? But I blame it on the Force theme because I heard that and that sent me over, you know. But it just was a really beautiful moment. And I just was like, God, I love Star Wars so much. It just is taking these things, which I know for a lot of people, they're like, this is like a little green baby, you know, and this CGI Luke. And it's like, no, it's so much deeper and how it connects to our world. It's just, it's beautiful.
Oh, go ahead, Ken.
No need for me to spend any more time on it. We've talked a lot about it here and will again, but I love hearing what you're saying, Jennifer, and how that, you know, the thumbs up, thumbs down reviews on the episodes. Does the tech work? Is the tech morally right? All those kind of things. I understand and love a lot of those conversations. I've had a few of them off air recently with friends. But at the end of the day, the reason I keep coming back to this every week is what you're saying, Jen, is it hits you on a level you didn't expect. It hits you with the magic, and that's why we keep investing in Star Wars. And that's why sometimes I seem even in the last year just less interested in what some of that discussion around the stuff is. Let's discuss what is there. It's so important for me because that's how you end up crying on your couch.
Yeah,
exactly.
I love what you're both saying, and it to me, it's a part of what makes Star Wars unique and weird and different is that it's always had these technological pushes, right? So it's like, yeah, that was a conversation between a Muppet and a man with a computer face, but it moved me deeply and related to my life and is gonna help me, you know.
Right.
So there were so many returning characters. We only have so long for this episode. This episode could be 8 hours long. But we wanted to touch on all these great returning characters and see who you really gravitated to, Jennifer. We had Cad Bane, Cobb Vanth, Black Chrysanthemum, Ahsoka, Pelimoto, the N1 Starfighter. I'm sure I'm forgetting characters. Which of those spoke to you the most, Jennifer?
Peli. Oh my gosh. Amy Sedaris was brilliant. Like those scenes, the way she's talking to the Jawas, the way she's talking to her pit droids. Star Wars language is really difficult, right? It's not easy to be shooting out those terms. She did it so effortlessly and so believably. I just was, I loved it. The humor that she brought, I just thought that it was, they used her so well. Right? They really played to her strengths as an actor. It was great. All of it. That whole sequence with the N1 Starfighter. I mean, I could go on and on. It was like a feast for the eyes and tickles in my ears.
I really like your point that she's effortless with the delivery of it. It's comedy, but it was a lot of spaceship part jargon that she just threw over her shoulder.
Yeah, you know, and she's not like a Star Wars fan, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like she's coming to this just from scratch, and it was perfect.
It's fun to imagine like Pelimoto as a character getting that script and going, "You want me to say what? Okay."
Oh, she was wonderful.
Ken, who did you gravitate to the most out of these returning characters? Is it just all of them, or is somebody ringing in your head now that the whole thing is done?
Well, it is truly all of them. I'm such a fan of Cad Bane, and wow, I get to cheer him in a different way. I love the cut of my own growth with the live-action version of Cobb Vanth, which initially I was on board with, but it didn't completely connect with what I would expect from the character. Black Chrysanthemum, I love. Ahsoka, Pelimoto, grew to love. But that N1 Starfighter, it's still this big billboard of prequel love. It's something that I didn't necessarily expect. And even once it started to happen, I'm like, oh, this is going to be cool. I had a big smile on my face. They really just lean into it. And it's still, I keep going to Bryce Dallas Howard, getting so much emotion out of the scenes that she shot. And that N1 Starfighter, man, it's the superstar, the breakout superstar of the series for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm kind of with you on that. I love Cad Bane. Could go on and on about how great he was, that he was nightmare fuel. Ahsoka and Luke meeting is huge, and we're going to see more of. But I was really moved by Cobb Vanth and his story of a lack of armor, right? How many people say, like, oh, you shouldn't have given up that armor, and, you know, what have you been up to since losing the armor? Well, I've been more careful. I thought it was this great story of, like, doing the right thing makes you vulnerable sometimes. Like, he had to give up that armor to protect his town, and it has made him more vulnerable, but he's got people to literally pick him up, you know, when he falls. That story, in just the charm. Yeah, I've been saying think it through to myself about everything I've been doing. Think it through. and then my quick thought on the N1 is just, like, I loved how much it represented the fun and the joy of Star Wars. You know, I don't think Wizard was just like, yay, he said the line. I think it was about that spirit of fun and adventure and change was still open to him. Mm-hmm. I think one of the, like, huge lines for me in the whole show is when Din goes to Cobb Vanth, and Cobb Vanth kind of says, like, he's admiring, like, an old muscle car, like, is that a Naboo starfighter? And Din says, that's what it started off as. In a show about change, like, that's why it's there. It's not there just for nostalgia. It's there to start with nostalgia, take something cool from the past and build something new out of it. That's so great to me.
Wow. Yeah. I'm fist pumping right now. That's exactly it. That's exactly it. Yes.
Awesome. Well, at the risk of swerving quickly from joy, I did want to leave room to discuss anything that we disliked or questioned or struggled with. Was there anything, Jennifer, that was an obstacle for you enjoying this show?
No, I mean, I was actually, the only time I started wondering was when I started seeing the discourse online on Twitter. And I was like, oh my gosh, are we watching the same show? Because I'm really having fun with this. I don't know. So then I just closed the app and, you know, I went on to TikTok. Because people on TikTok are so, I don't know, they're just really nice, and it's kind of refreshing as opposed to how YouTube has been, which has not been as kind. So but no, I loved every moment of it. Loved it. I'm loving this new era, and I think Jon Favreau and Dave Filoni are doing something really magical. It's really exciting.
Well, that's great. That is really, really great to hear. And I think at the end of the day, I feel like you as well. I think I want to listen to the criticisms because I think sometimes they're important. And sometimes, even though I disagree with them, I kind of want to know where people are coming from. But sure. I definitely did have that disconnect of like, yeah, no, I get where that's coming from. I understand why people would feel that way or perceive that way. Or I understand why people would guess that motivation of the creators. But for me, it was really joyful and only becoming more joyful as we talk about it. How about you, Ken?
I where I'm at, if you want to ask about rankings, I got asked that a few times this weekend by at a bar. I ranked this above Mando season 2 for me. I know that's not so for everybody. I just enjoyed it from start to finish. I'm with Joseph on that. I understand and sometimes like to hear the other sides and discussions. At the end of the day, with this particular show, even some of the problems I have with Mando, which is I love the volume. I also kind of don't love it. It's this weird relationship I have with it. It looks amazing. It's this wonderful tech. It looks small and looks kind of awkward to me at times. All those things that I had with Mando that I got stuck in my head about, not here. I just, something about it opened up my heart. There was just something that the whole show spoke to me outside of big big questions that it brought up and some, you know, societal issues that we all could learn from and discuss. All those kind of things were there. I get that. I'm not throwing that out. I'm not throwing anyone's opinion of the show out, by the way. Just
right.
I'm like, Jen, I've heard some of them. Even this weekend to some friends, I was just like, Yeah, I loved it. I got nothing for you. Like, I got nothing for you. I understand the style was different. I think the style, I keep saying the style is very stubborn. It is. I'm hoping Obi-Wan has a different feel and a different momentum to the show. I think both Mando and Boba Fett take their time in a way that I enjoy, but I don't want all my Star Wars every week to be like that. So I'm looking forward to a different style. I'm really looking forward to Andor shot on, you know, location elsewhere. I love the volume. I love the volume. It's just, I think it's still growing and getting better for me. And this season had some amazing effects. And I think they're growing leaps and bounds. So end of the day, I get it all. But man, this is a 7-chapter story I really love.
Very well said, Ken. I think that's absolutely great. We are heading toward wrapping up here. Were there any other things that we particularly loved that we wanted to share? Jennifer, were there any other scenes, characters, action moments, canon connections that you wanted to be sure to shout out?
The spin. I know. Oh my gosh. No, like I said, it was a feast for the eyes. Every single thing I could. This is the first time where I'm actually going back and rewatching just moments of the episodes or actually watching full episodes, which I have not done in a long time because I put it on. And even my two girls, they saw a little scene from the finale and they were engrossed. They were cheering, you know, when the Rancor was appearing and Grogu, they were into it. And I was shocked. And then I had to turn it off, you know, because I didn't want them to see any of the other stuff. But that, to me, I was like, this is a testament to how great this show is, that it can appeal to me, an old lady, and my kids. And, you know, they don't know all about the lore and whatever. They just had fun with it. And I thought that is a successful Star Wars show, to be able to play on those two levels.
Yeah, yeah. Boba Fett on the Rancor, man. It works on multiple levels. Ken, for me, the only other moment I wanted to be sure to shout out is I just love Luke giving Grogu the little force hop so he can keep up on their walk.
Oh.
I would pay so much money for Luke Skywalker to do that to me. It'd be so great.
Yeah.
Ken, any other moments you want to shout out?
No. We'll keep coming back to them. We might do some ranked on best moments, all those kind of things. I just really enjoyed so many little things. There's so many of my favorite little thing in Star Wars is those little moments that keep pulling you back. And there was time and time again from Kersantan's eyes. So glad you pointed that out, Jen, to Garza Fwip's kind of smiles, both real and fake. I loved it all. And problems and all, there's always going to be problems. We always say that. I was just not swimming in that part of the pool and loved everything about it.
Oh, that is awesome. So, Jennifer, we want to ask you the final question, final weird fun question. If you had a back-to-tank like Boba Fett, what life flashbacks would you have while soaking in your back-to-tank?
Are they supposed to be positive or negative?
Whatever you want to be. Take the question where you want to go.
I think I'd like to go back to my theater days when I was at South Coast Repertory in Orange County taking classes and deciding I wanted to be an actor and I really should have gone a different direction. But you know what? it was some really wonderful times and I had a lot of wise mentors back then. So yeah, that was a great time.
Well, there you go, listeners. A little preview of the Book of Jennifer Landa gets in there, and then that theme song kicks in of Landa.
Jen Landa.
All right. We would love to continue talking. We have to keep this episode moving. So, Ken, do you want to let people know where they can find us?
Yeah, absolutely. You can find us on Twitter at Force Center Pod. We're on Instagram and YouTube as well. Facebook page is Force Center Podcast. Podcasts available on Acast, iHeartRadio, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and a whole lot more. Merch available at tpublic.com/user/Force Center. You can support us directly at patreon.com/Force Center. From there, you can get into our Discord where we have a weekly conversation. A character of the week when I can actually get to it. This week, we've been talking about Vi Marotti. Mm. A lot of fun discussions over there. You can support us there. You can follow me at Kednapsock. Go to my website, kednapsock.com. Joseph, where can they find you?
Yeah, you can find me Twitter, Instagram, TikTok is at Joseph Scrimshaw. And check out all of my other adventures on my website, josephscrimshaw.com. And Jennifer, where can people find you?
You can find me on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook at Jennifer Landa, and on TikTok at Jennifer Landa 1138.
That is it for this episode. For myself, for Ken, for Jennifer, for all the fun aliens we got to see, this has been Force Center.